The following live recording of Swami Vivekananda Saraswati is presented by agamayoga.com.
Of a few mentions now and then when we spoke about healing in day 8, or yesterday when we spoke about rajas, we have actually not said much about the yogic diet, about the eating part related with yoga. And of course you know that, at least from a health standpoint, but also now that you understood that purification is related with the mind as well and with the emotions, actually for the yogis this story of diet has a certain practical relevance. And basically we are going to speak both today and tomorrow about some things related with it. The first issue which naturally comes in the mind of people, especially when you have been inquiring a little bit through the Indian yoga ways, is of course the question if yoga has got anything to do with vegetarianism, because in India most Hindu people would be vegetarians, and as a result of it, of course, most yogis from India, they would be vegetarians. And as such, many people are curious, perhaps even a bit worried or disturbed by it, if yoga involves vegetarianism. People would simply ask, do I have to turn vegetarian if I am a yogi or what? Now, of course, this discussion may be irrelevant for some people who have already taken a decision to be vegan, vegetarian, who have some very strong beliefs about these things in their life, and then it can only empower some of their beliefs, it can only show them some points, some ups and downs. But the fact is still there, we need to talk a little bit if yoga and vegetarianism are related in this way. And to start very simple, we should say that a straight question deserves a straight answer. If you are asking me straight and dry, do I have to turn vegetarian to become a yogi, the answer will be no, you don't have to. Simple answer. There have been people in this world, yogis, let's say not only Indian yogis but also Tibetan yogis, yogis of other kinds, there have been people of spirit in this world, either in the West or in Tibet, people who have reached through their spiritual exercises the heights of spirit, who have not been vegetarians. Albeit, I would say, perhaps there are not many, but still there have been such people. This simple thing shows a very simple fact. You may reach a lot of accomplishments, including the high spiritual accomplishments in yoga, without turning vegetarian. On the other hand, let us not forget that in many countries of the West, like for example Great Britain was famous at some time for this, there are people, there are sort of a million people or something who are vegetarian without at the same time being yogis or making part of any special spiritual organization or practicing a spiritual path. This shows that the two things are different, and yet when we look at people of genius from Plato and Socrates to Leonardo da Vinci and Albert Einstein, when we look at the majority of yogis, and when we look at the great saints of Christianity and others, we generally find them opting more rather towards vegetarianism, towards a simple, light diet, which most often would be vegetarian. Now, of course, the sense of the word vegetarianism is also different. There is one sense which some people ascribe to it. We are going to talk in the end about what is vegetarianism and how far it can be pushed, or what are the different limits and meanings of it. Until then, let us say it like this. It seems that although it is not an oath, a religious thing, a forbiddance, a blockage or anything, since we know that at the same time the meat and other related products may be impure or may be more impure than others, surely the relativity is there. If you are eating a very chemical soft drink or something like this, might be as pure as if you would eat meat, or as impure, because because it contains a lot of crazy chemicals in it and so on. So everything is relative when you think about it intelligently. But fact is that we see in spirituality, and especially in Indian spirituality, where the environment was also vegetarian because of the Hindu religion, which is a predominantly vegetarian religion, almost totally vegetarian religion. And because of this, we will see actually that many yogis have opted for it. That is why it is necessary to have tonight a bit of discussion to see why would yogis and why would other people as well turn vegetarian. What are the arguments pro and contra of this kind of thing? And I will tell from the very beginning that I have discovered that people divide arguments pro and contra vegetarianism in three vast categories. The first category, just to take it abruptly, is the one which concerns health and hygiene. It is a trite fact to say, and it just requires for you to do a bit of homework, that means to dig a little bit through the libraries and archives, to see then time and again, scientific study after scientific study, statistic after statistic, research after research, keeps on proving that vegetarian diet is more clean, it is more healthy, that vegetarians tend to have less heart disease, less cancer, live long, whatever. It is simply a truism, that means some people may say, no, I have heard else. It means you haven't read quite a lot. If you will read quite a lot, you will see. Even the American Food and Drug Administration research, and the Americans are very twisted at this and very politically correct and very careful not to offend anybody and very much supporting their own meat production cartels and so on, like in with the pharmaceuticals, they do the same. Even the FDA research says black on white, it is actually noticed that a vegetarian diet lacking this and this would actually be more healthy and promote longevity. Why it isn't promoted openly and the doctor doesn't tell you, look, after all, if you really want to know, medical science has demonstrated this and this, it's again a mystery. You know that people like their habits, you know, it's like somebody who drinks heavily and he knows he's going down and yet he keeps on drinking heavily because the habit is a big thing. It's exactly like one who smokes his big cigars and although he knows nicotine and the tar is not doing any good to his lungs, he keeps on smoking and says it's one of the pleasures of my life. Exactly in the same way, some people might find out that sausages are actually not the best thing to put inside yourself and yet keep doing it because they say, what the heck, my life without a beefsteak would be no more life and I'll have to go into that. That is why people usually have this egoistic way, very, you know, almost aggressive way of don't step on my limits. You know, it's my limits, it's my freedom, I do what I want. And if you tell me that, you even irritate me, I'm going to get irritated that you tell me that I'm doing the right thing. Therefore, although it may be good, people won't like to hear about it and they say, yeah, it's good, yeah, but forget, there's many good things which we don't do, so forget about it. So one way over the other, although the knowledge is there, it is one of those knowledges which is ignored. It's like the tobacco advertising where on them it says, research says that this does cancer, you know, it's even put on the advertising and yet it keeps on. It's a multi-billion dollar industry and so on. So this being said, I'm saying simply this much. If you do not believe in this, do your homework and see. Research has demonstrated that the meat eating is indeed noxious to health. As I said, in Great Britain, at some point in the 90s, there were more than a million registered vegetarians. Most of them were doing it for hygienical reasons, considering that it brings more health, more longevity. Statistic after statistic demonstrates this. I can say that perhaps in 20 years of reading books on diet and vegetarianism, I mean people analyzing this thing, probably I met two or three books, maybe four books, where the author was on the opinion that actually you shouldn't be a vegetarian because meat has some kind of indispensable things. If you don't eat meat, you will lose the potassium for the electric activity of the brain. If you don't eat meat, says somebody else, you will lose the B12 vitamin and you will become anemic. If you don't eat meat, you will lose your sexual energy because that's what gives us the animal sexual factor. If you don't eat meat, it's not good for your blood type and you might get clogged or something. If you don't eat meat, you are going to lose the killer instinct and therefore you are going to lose the edge of your personality, the sharpness of your intelligence and so on. I have met so many theories, and when I try to analyze them scientifically, that means 2 and 2 makes 4, to see where the logical reasoning of it, in 99% of the cases I found them flawed. The guy was simply, or the author was simply jumping from one to the other, considering it well understood what he said. That is why I personally have never been convinced by any book which said one should eat meat and meat products because of some need. I personally, before starting yoga until the age of 19, have been a heavy meat eater and converted myself to vegetarianism at that time because I thought it was the right thing for me. And of course I was used the other way and I could feel the difference quite well. And I can tell you that in 23 years I didn't lose my memory, I didn't become anemic, I didn't waste my sexual energy, I didn't lose the edge of my intelligence or anything than this. I was still able to do heavy work for days at a stretch. I was able to go on without sleeping. I can use my intelligence and all the others. And because of this, all these things are utopias. Whoever says, I'm not quitting eating meat because I shall lose my sexual power or whatever, or intelligence or whatever, I personally send them my laughter because it's not true. I have been there and done that. I have tried it for 20-something years and it is not true. It is simply that you are actually having all the energy. It is, you are not losing anything, exception made of the hidden pleasure of your senses that sometimes you enjoy eating those things, which is an entirely different story. Saying this, I can only invite you to read statistics, to read research. Even in the papers that you have received today, there is quite a page about all kinds of secret things which you are not being told, including the fact that the meat rots from the moment it is dead from second one, including the fact that meat is grown in horrible conditions. If you have been ever to a meat farm or anything like this, you have seen that the animals are pumped with steroids, they are pumped with antibiotica, they are pumped with a lot of things, and not to speak about the unnice way in which they are kept and treated. So basically, if I'm resuming myself to health, to biochemistry, to the contents of it, the meat, either it is kosher meat or halal meat or biodynamic meat or whatever, it usually presents a lot of impurities. I will not do the effort of telling you what it is. Take any good pro-vegetarian book and read it carefully. You are going to see a lot of things which are not being told openly. Take several of them, make comparison, analyze the researches, and you'll be able to do the thinking for yourself. Fact is that it appears that the meat impurifies the body. Because of this impurity, there will result more disease, paradoxically less energy. There are research which shows that taking meat you can create diabetes, that eating too much meat you can become anemic. Yes, that is true, anemia. So you'd believe that meat gives you a lot of vitality, and actually you can cause anemia and other things. It's all of it documented in research over research. I would say that every honest research in the field of diet, if you take 100 researches on it, 100 books on it or works, you will find that 95% of them honestly and straightly go to this. They say vegetarianism is healthier. Perhaps it's not, it doesn't feed our pleasures in the same way, but if you want to be healthy, it is there. That is why I told you, in some situations we are forced to get onto it. Like for example, you try to heal a cancer by alternative medicine, by naturist medicine and yoga. Again, I told you in that evening when I kept this lecture, if you have a flu, it won't matter so much. But with a cancer, if you don't go vegetarian day one, might postpone the healing so long that it may become dangerous. That is why, one over the other, vegetarianism is definitely an injunction from a health and hygienical standpoint. And here I can only recommend literature. The people from the Hare Krishna, although I personally don't sympathize their sect inclinations so much, Nevertheless, being staunch Hindu-type vegetarians, they wrote an excellent study on vegetarianism, very documented scientifically. They started to go to the bottom of it. That book is quite inspiring for anybody wishing to go in vegetarian fields. In a totally different trend or a different kind of literature, I once had the opportunity to read a feminist British guide on vegetarianism. It was called the Live Wire Guide to Vegetarianism. It seems that the Live Wire Guide too is a series of pro-feminist kind of literature. One of them was about vegetarianism. Nevertheless, it was written by some very intelligent persons, and it was full of sense of humor and fully acid and fully documented, and reading it you could only laugh. I mean, when you read that book you could only laugh of yourself, and it really made you turn vegetarian just by reading it, because it was full of common sense and full of wonderful modern arguments, not at all related with any religious, metaphysical or spiritual things. It's true, it had a chapter which was rabidly anti-macho. It said that eating meat is macho and only the macho guys like to eat meat and blah blah blah, but that was the only feminist outburst in that book. The rest of it was quite scientific and humoristic. Well, coming back to our story, therefore I don't need to insist too much on it. If you would like to research a little bit for increasing the quality of your life, asking yourself what to do so that your breath should not smell, or that your lymph system should become more clean, or that your life should be longer, or whatever, really look into this, because research there seems to show a lot. People in Caucasus and in Ecuador in South America, who are among the longest lived communities on the earth, these villages with people over 100 years, most of them are strictly lacto-vegetarian. They eat eggs, they eat milk and dairy products, and they eat a lot of vegetables. They wouldn't touch meat. Of course, it is also true that those people from Ecuador and from Caucasus, they live in high mountains, they breathe there for very clean air, they are drinking crystal water from springs of the mountains, they don't live in stress and in smog in big cities, they are not stressed up by stupid jobs and so on. So basically, of course, there are many other differences which make that their life is so peaceful and patriarchal, but diet still seems to have quite a point, quite a role to play. The second argument which is brought by people already interested in the more spiritual things is that meat is bringing in us low energies. That means you know already that everything in this world is also surrounded by an invisible field of energy, which is the energy specific to that. That means even metals, crystals, they have their own aura of energy, at least going to the second body, this etheric vital energy. When, therefore, you will not be at all surprised if we say that food and drinks are loaded with energy. This life force in India is called actually prana. This is the famous prana, or in the Chinese lore qi, and in Japan ki, the life force. Therefore, if I'm telling you that if you eat meat, when you eat meat together with that steak or whatever it is, there comes a certain amount of energy, you are absorbing a kind of, you will not be surprised, it's just simple logics. And I hope you will also not be shocked if I am telling you that by eating a steak, you are actually absorbing energy which used to belong to the animal to which that part belonged, right? Because that energy actually once was in that animal. Therefore, it wouldn't come as a complete shock to you to find out that when you eat pork, you are actually absorbing some pig prana, some prana which once you was in the aura of a pig. That eating mutton, you are actually absorbing sheep prana, and that eating beef, you are actually absorbing cow prana. It's just logical. Well, the point comes to this one. The yogis would say that the human being, as I told you 2 days ago when we spoke about this spirit, that we have a rebellious spirit in us which sometimes fights with the matter, with just the flesh, which is just stupid and wants to die and get dull. Exactly in the same way, we say that the human being sometimes is in a struggle with its own animal nature. I think it was Socrates who said, was asked some time, and he said that his vision of the human beings is that every man, every human being, is accompanied by a pig. This meant his animal nature, his animal. And he said every time when he sees people on the street, he says the man and the pig, the human and their pig. And most often, unfortunately, he sees them on the street with the pig riding on top of the man, not the man riding the pig. By this he actually meant to say that people are dominated by their body. Oh, if I'm having suddenly a desire, like I need to drink that or I need to eat that, boy, I can almost kill somebody. My desires are sovereign, you know, I don't care, you know, simply like this. Basically, I'm ruled by my physical needs. While, of course, we all know that when we read nice literature, there is supposed that the human being is a kind of spirit over matter. It's a victory of the spirit. And exactly as when you are a man, as soon as you get an erection, you don't just go to rape someone just because you have a sexual need. So you basically have the spirit censoring the impulses of the body. The same is all over, including the food and all the other animal drives of the human being. We can control them, that's why we have a spirit, that's why we have a conscience. And basically what the yogis would say, and this metaphysically occult-oriented people would say, is that the more you take animal energy in you, the more the animal part of us becomes strong. So for example, they'll say if you eat a lot of animal food, and that includes not only vegetarian, not only not meat, but even eggs and milk this time, like animal. It comes from animals, nevertheless it carries animal prana. Our animal side will become stronger. Example, if you want to fast, it will be difficult to fast when you have more animal energy, because your animal says, no, no, food, eat, I want to eat. If you want to sleep, and actually you have to do meditation, your animal says, no, 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 sleep, I'm drunk, no, I don't want. If you want to hold back your semen when you make love in the tantric way, your animal says, no, no, ejaculate, what the heck, and so on. It's a victory. We are sometimes struggling with ourselves. We are sometimes struggling with our animal nature. These people would say eating meat, especially, which is the direct taken, and other animal products which are indirect, but still they carry some things, it may amplify the animal factor in the human being. That is why, for example, different spiritual people, they were even staying away from any form of animal product, at least for periods of time. I don't know if you are aware, because Western Christianity has turned in centuries away from this, but in Eastern Christianity still they practice the famous Lent, that means periods of fasting, before certain religious ceremonies or events. And this fasting, this Lent, means a period of number of days, usually it's 40 days, where you don't touch any animal product. Any, like, not milk, not dairy, not eggs. So, for example, in Eastern Christianity, in Orthodox Christianity, they have 40 days of Lent before Christmas, they have 40 days of Lent before Easter, now they are in Lent, for example. They have 15 days Lent before Saint Mary in August. They have another 15 days of Lent, I don't know when, and then every Wednesday and Friday, every week, there are also Lent days. That means we are not supposed to eat meat. Plus a few occasional celebrations in the year. There are actually 210 or 215 Lent days over the year. More than half of the days of the year, there are days where they are not supposed to eat any animal product. And practicing Christians still do this today. For example, in Romania and the countryside, they still do this thing. It was supposed for them that not eating animal products, it kind of makes you lighter. I have tried this kind of thing, although I do not agree with people permanently going on this. I think that milk, dairy, eggs are perfectly okay and you need some of the things from there. But I have tried this kind of 40 days Lent and so on, and indeed you feel very different. This would be the equivalent of what we'd call today the vegan option. That's the word applied for it, when you don't eat any form of product coming from animal provenience, from animal origin. Anyhow, the point of it was that they would consider that the animal intake, and especially that of the meat, will make you heavier, a bit more animal. It is not a coincidence or a surprise to see that people like the fathers of the desert were staying in the desert and praying up and so on. They wouldn't have touched any form of animal product. They were more like angels, less than human beings, and therefore they are really staying away from it. The third argument, which is indeed the heavy one, and it contains in it a lot of factors, because we said two by now, right? The hygienical health, simply. The occult, you don't want to take too much animal energy because it arouses your own animal. And the third one would be the ones of ethical and moral character. Basically, many thinkers of this world, in Hinduism and in Buddhism, it is even institutionalized. But you see, you are in a Buddhist country and nobody seems to care about it. If you read Buddhist literature, you will see it is quite an abomination, the way you see it around here and in Bangkok, at least from the standpoint of Orthodox Buddhism, of course. It is advocated, or it is stated, that human beings haven't got the moral right to kill other beings for their own pleasure. Here we need to go in a lot of shades of it, because of course you wouldn't be a cannibal, right? You wouldn't eat other human beings, although you know that there still exist cannibals on this planet. In Africa and in some places of South America, there still exist isolated communities who now and then practice cannibalism. They also feel justified in what they do. Many thinkers of this planet, they say there is no moral right which authorizes you to take an animal and to kill it for your pleasure. Here I would like to make it very clear. The yogis have been very common sense about this, and they have simply said, look, we consider that the human being is the most precious creation of this planet. That means not only from a Darwinistic standpoint that it's evolution and man is the top species for the time being, but also the human being from a spiritual standpoint is considered to be the only possibility on this planet of reaching consciousness and therefore of reaching enlightenment, of reaching supreme realization. Because animals have got no consciousness, no conscious function. Because of this, a cow cannot become a Buddha. In fairy tales, perhaps you have read stupid things like this, they are metaphorical, but in practice, the yogis say even a monkey or a dolphin or a whale or an elephant, in spite of their big brain or sophisticated intelligence, they have never been reaching any state of superconsciousness or spiritual realization. Because of this, the human being is the most precious. All the yogis say to be born as a human being on this planet is a privilege, is a gift. You should value it. It's so wonderful to be born as a human being. It's such an amazing chance. Don't waste it. But then also they say, for the human being to survive, everything else can be sacrificed. Because if you have to choose between a cow and a human being, of course you can sacrifice the cow so that the human being should live. So if we are coming to the point of survival, things are very clear. The yogis do not hesitate. They say the whole nature is put there to support the flower of the tree. The flower is the purpose. The human being is the flower of the tree of nature. Therefore, it is wonderful that you can do that. But when your life is not threatened, then it becomes a luxury. That means, in Tibet, for example, people are living sometimes at 4,000 meters high. There is no agricultural soil. There is just barren rock. At that temperature, on such a rock, in dry and wind conditions, extreme storms, temperatures, and all the conditions which they have there, to grow vegetables, or it's just almost impossible. A little patch of land here and there, they can grow a little bit of buckwheat or a little bit of something, and the agriculture of Tibet was so weak. In such conditions, yogis like Milarepa and others and so on, living high in the mountains, what should they eat? Of course, they ate butter from the yaks and so on, but there it would mean to import everything from China, from India, for it would be enormously expensive. So that is why, yes, it is true. You are going to read, for example, that many Tibetan yogis, and it is today absurdly a little bit because he lives in India, but it is even the case of the Dalai Lama, they did not practice vegetarianism. They were partly vegetarian, and sometimes they had to eat animal products because it was a matter of survival. Either we immigrate somewhere else, or we die, or if not, we have to eat meat or some animal product, full stop. The same would be valid if you are born in Greenland. If you are an Eskimo born in Greenland, nobody would say you should have eaten carrots and saved the seals and the fish and the polar bears and whatever else they eat up there. Because there is no vegetables, there is no cereals. You are doomed to death. You are in a hell made of ice. And basically, that's the only food available. That is why, again, I'm saying, if the life conditions push you, you need to save your life. You have almost a moral duty to save your life. I was thrilled to see some years ago this movie which showed the moral dilemma of this football team from Argentina and or Chile. The movie is called Alive. It's made from a real fact happened in the 70s when a whole football team and their sympathizers and others, they shipwrecked with an airplane in the Andes. The airplane crashed some 5,000 meters high or something like this in the middle of eternal ice. Nobody found them, they couldn't be found, so suddenly they had 30 people in the middle of the ice, 30 dead, 30 surviving, some of them wounded heavily, and they had no food, and they had no fire, and they had no wood, and they had nothing. And they survived in this hell for some 70 days or 90 days, I don't remember. And basically what they did was the unthinkable. They started eating the dead, because they simply, there was a choice. Either we eat the flesh of the dead, or we die. So they had a huge moral, after all they became cannibals, they ate dead human beings. And for them the choice was very simple, we die or we survive even at this cost. They survived, some two of them managed to go and to bring help after 70 days, 90 days, 100 days, I don't remember. And when they came down they were so ashamed, I mean they saved their life with such a terrible price, that all of them changed. I've seen interviews made with them 20 years after, and all of them said, when I came down from there, I was so horrified at what I had to do to save my pathetic life, that actually I thought that if I don't make it worth it, it's a failure. I would have better died in the ice, because then I should give price to my life, so I feel that it was worth saving it. So in this way, these people, after all of them started asking themselves, why? Now let me make my life significant or something, because else I did that abomination just to eat and sleep further. It's like it has not much sense, right? And in this way, yes, the yogis would say, right, if you have to save your life, yes. But in modern conditions of life, even in Europe, when you come to places like this one, like India and others, the nature is so rich and you have so many alternatives, that actually eating meat is simply a luxury. It's a choice. That simply means if you would, you would be able to survive without doing it. And if you do it, you don't do it because else you would die. You do it simply because you want it. That's a choice, and all these kind of choices are therefore paid, including with the karma of killing and so on. Of course, you sometimes think, I am not killing animals, right, but since you pay for it, you sponsor it, and therefore not only you condone it, you support it. If nobody would pay for it, this industry would disappear in 6 months from the face of this planet. So in this way, basically paying for it is not that you do the gesture yourself, but still it involves it. That means the following. And you know that today we have gone so far that we have got even products that imitate meat. You can make a schnitzel out of soya protein or whatever. You won't even feel the difference. Sometimes you serve it to people. If it's well cooked, people can't say if it's meat or not. So basically it's not even a matter of taste eventually. It's a matter of stopping being inert and trying to do something about it. And then even your taste, because today there are almost duplicates for every form of food that you want to have with meat, that you can duplicate it in a vegetarian version. So you can compare this, the fact that you are born in Greenland and you have to eat fish and seal and whatever, and compare it with the Romans. The Romans did 7 days parties in which they ate exquisite things, right? How far the mind can be perverted. They would eat, for example, a special dish, the rich Romans who could afford, a special dish which was made from nightingale tongues. Now the nightingale is a small bird which sings so wonderfully, and the tongue of the nightingale is just a 1 centimeter thing. So to be able to make a dish for 100 people of nightingale tongue should kill some 40,000 nightingales just for a party. And not only that the Romans would do this, killing 40,000 birds just for having a snobbish food, but at the same time they are vomiting afterwards. They are eating and throwing up and eating and throwing up and eating and drinking, and kept it on like this for 7 days. That's a sick abuse. That is simply too to simply make, to, you know, to jeer at Mother Nature, to simply prostitute Mother Nature. That means the nature is trying so heavily to create life, and you are serving 40,000 nightingale tongues. It's a sick perversion, after all. It's one thing that you are dying and you need to eat something because else you would die. It's such a big difference. That is why the yogis say, yes, if you are a Tibetan yogi, if you are put in some situation where you don't have, eat whatever you have to eat. It will bring you impurities, it will bring you animal energy, you will have to do more pranayama, you will have to do more shankha prakshalana, you will have to do more purification. It's your problem. I mean, you will simply have to work 30% more than, or 50% more than one who is a vegetarian. That's your doom, because you are born there and you do that. But the yogis say, if you have the possibility to live in the other way, better do it. It's more wise. You are sparing on the nature. This moral thing has a lot of ethical implications. It has a lot of social implications. Today, most books of vegetarianists, they present researches which show that, for example, to bring up a kilo of animal proteins, you use 1,000 and I don't know how many times more resources than to bring up a kilo of vegetal proteins. Basically, the statistics show that if everybody on this planet should be vegetarian, this planet could feed 60 billion people or thereabout. It is funny that we complain that there die people there, there die people there, and we make fuss about the Twin Tower thing and so on, but then you probably forgot that every day, according to some statistics, there are 24,000 people on this planet, now in 2003, who die of starvation. Every day, most of them children. Every day, 20,000 something people die of hunger. It's a shame that in a civilization where we make fuss for I don't know what politically correct little thing and so on, 20 something thousand people die every day, every single day, and basically we don't care. And we say there is no food. There is food, but to create meat, it's a luxury, and that meat is simply created, simply taking the food from somewhere else. There are so many factors. If you read one of these books, you would be completely shocked of things which you didn't know. 3 years ago or something, the Brazilian government voted a law by which they approved officially that half of the Brazilian rainforest should be cut down. It's the biggest forest on the earth. It is called the lungs of the earth. It is the most big generator of oxygen besides the marine plankton on this planet. And they approved to cut it down. And you know, when I was a child, my teacher in school told me that they cut down the rainforest in the Amazon because of the rare essence wood, because they search for mahoni and alabaster wood and whatever. And it's not true. They are cutting the rainforest of the Amazon for grazing cattle, for the meat producing industry. They cut it so quickly that they don't even care about the wood, and they don't have anything to do with that wood, which may be precious, and they burn it. They simply burn hundreds of square kilometers of the rainforest to free it quickly so that the cattle can graze. So the meat producing industry is the one which is destroying the rainforest of the Amazon. Many people made fuss a few years ago, the ozone layer, another problem of the culture, right? So what should you do not to destroy the ozone layer anymore? You should not use spray, like deodorants and things. You should not use refrigerators, because most of them work with freon. And of course you should diminish the cars and the fossil fuel use. Right, those may be true, but you know that there is a factor which destroys the ozone layer 4 times more than all the freon industry in the world, sprays, refrigerators and the others. That factor is the noxious gases emanated by the feces of animals from farms. For example, in England, in 1995, when it was in that book, they were growing every year for cutting 550 million chicken were sacrificed every year. That's a big holocaust, and 550 million chicken, they produce pools and lakes of shit, to be pretty straight on it, rivers of it. And all those faces, any one of you who has gone near a farm, you know how it stinks, both it's a pig farm or a chicken farm or whatever, it vaporizes. That stink is sulfurous and nitrous gases, which vaporize and which rise to the stratosphere, and they stop the ionizing, they combine with the ions there and they destroy the ozone layer. So when somebody tells you that you should not eat a spray for destroying the ozone layer, tell them to stop eating meat, because it is the meat producing industry which destroys the ozone layer much more than all the freon on this. That is why eventually we come to pay this luxury a lot. We create very heavily meat proteins. We leave a lot of people starving and dying of starvation in such a civilized world as we consider ourselves. We are destroying the ozone layer. We are burning down the forests and deforesting and doing all those. So it's a huge price to pay. And then when we eat it, it's not even healthy. It destroys our health. That's a really ridiculous effort that we do. And there are so many other points in this. Read a little bit more and you will see that this meat producing industry is an absurdity, especially when you don't need it. I will never say that the Eskimos don't need meat. Okay, maybe perhaps even in Greenland they keep importing carrots and potatoes today. That's their problem, and I don't know how much and how much it costs and what's the most economically viable, if they could survive like that or not. But those are extreme conditions. Most people are not in those extreme conditions. Basically, the yogis say that in the normal conditions that we know, you can live without eating meat, and eating meat is simply a matter of fun, and it's hardly a fun to kill and to eat for your pleasure. That is why the yogis would say that morally and ethically we are not justified to go in that direction. And because of this, they simply say that we undergo the elementary law of karma. Because it is true that there is a negative karma if a human being kills another human being, but it is also true that there is some negative karma when a human being kills an animal, because the animal feels pain, it feels stress, it feels anxiety and all the rest. All the vegetarian organizations who are trying to preach this, they simply say if you don't believe this and you believe in the myth of clean meat industry and clean sacrificing of animals and civilized ways, just go to a slaughterhouse in the day when they are doing the slaughter and ask to be taken around and to see. Most people who see slaughtering in slaughterhouses, they stop eating meat instantaneously. The vegetarian associations, they even sell videos for those who are too lazy to go themselves. They show you videos of what is happening in the slaughterhouse and for what you pay. It's not nice, it's horrible, it's simply a murder on a large scale. And it's true that slaughtering a pig is not as big as slaughtering a human being. But if in your life you get to slaughter 100 pigs, maybe 100 pigs sum up together, they get to make up as much as a human being or about. So just piling up little by little, you may accumulate enough karma to be pretty loaded. That is why Pythagoras also said the human beings who kill animals, they lose respect for life and they get loaded and loaded, and eventually they'll start killing each other. This is how violence and disrespect for life appears. The yogis say that as long as this karma hangs on mankind, and you can see people killing when it wouldn't be necessary, again I'm saying, then the yogis say that it's obvious that we have a lot of problems, because it's karma. People complain about social violence, domestic violence, wars, conflicts, incurable diseases, and all. It's like a doom, you know. If you say, why do we have war all the time, and even in the 20th century we had like more wars than ever, and so on. Why do we have still incurable diseases, and when they heal one, there appears a new one, or something like this? What is this? And the yogis say, of course it's normal, because there is karma, and this karma has to be fulfilled one way or another. So if you have a heavy karma, you have to pay through the nose, either you like it or not. Nobody can avoid that. Karma is unavoidable, and therefore creating negative karma, there will be always such phenomena. That is why the yogis say if we stop violence against the nature, we would be able to live better. This planet would become a cleaner place. Many people argue, but don't you kill carrots as well? Right, but carrots don't have a nervous system like the animals, and although plants can also feel stress, and certain elementary things, it's not so developed. You will never see a carrot running with a knife in, plugged in it and screaming or whatever. It's a big difference between a pig and a cow and a carrot, and that is why the thumb rule is that the lower you go on the scale of evolution, the less noxious it becomes. That is why in yoga they even have this thing. They say the worst are the mammals, the superior animals. Monkey, dolphin, whales, cows, pig, mutton, these ones are number one, the one which we usually describe as red meat. It is not very flattering for the human beings, but you should know that the animal which is anatomically closest to the human being, and on which they use for surgery, transplant of organs and so on, are actually most often not the primates, the monkeys, because actually we don't eat monkeys so much as well, but the pig. The pig is the one which is closest. That's why the pig seems to be the top of the list in this. Then they say chicken, fowl, birds are less than the mammals because they are more primitive as animals. They have a less developed consciousness, brain, nervous system. Then you go lower, you have the fish, the reptilians, the seafood, the oysters, this kind of stuff. And then, of course, if you go lower, then you have the plants and so on. That is why some people would say, okay, at least cut down the red meat, at least if you can cut down the birds and so on. Then some people in Japan, for example, the Japanese Zen forms of vegetarianism includes fish and seafood because they say that, okay, that is less primitive, it's like not the real animals. The yogis say, of course, but even the fish is animals, not to forget that the dolphins and the whales are not fish, they are mammals, they are just like the cow and the others. So this being the thing, one on top of the other, I could keep on bringing you arguments, but I'll leave you the pleasure to read some good documented book in this. The yogis would agree that if you don't die of hunger, there is no moral justification for killing just for fun. And that is why they say that you may choose to do it, but it will bring some karma, it will bring some impurities, you will need to fight. I can give you examples. Tibetan yogis did that. If you want a modern example, you can also take the famous Gurdjieff. Gurdjieff, I told you some wild stories about this Gurdjieff, and who was definitely a high class initiate. He was at the same time provocative, and yes, he was not a vegetarian, he would eat meat. But Gurdjieff was a person who had reached very high spiritual levels. He was having a very high power of his yoga. He was able to transmit energy just with his eyes and so on. He was very good at it. Somehow he had a very strong Manipura and he could burn this kind of things. So basically Gurdjieff lived 76 years or something like this, although he was smoking cigars, drinking heavily and eating meat. But he was a very powerful person. He had a big Manipura, as I said. He knew a lot of occult processes. He could purify himself, and he chose. He also wanted to be scandalous. He wanted to show that a spiritual person doesn't need to be like Catholic angels or something like this. So coming in the West at the time where the Catholic religion was falling apart and all these archetypes of the Western spirituality were falling apart, Gurdjieff wanted to be provocative and to show that it can be in another way, and it actually doesn't depend if you are dressed in white or holy or whatever, that the spiritual consciousness is something else. And for this reason, he always chose to be provocative. So this included even eating meat. He never changed his diet. He went on this while he was in Asia. He was not eating meat when he was training, when he was young. But he did this thing. But again, not many people are like Gurdjieff. And remember, it involves effort. The thumb rule is like this. If two people start practicing, two colleagues in yoga, two people of comparable spiritual level, yoga practice level, they start today doing a practice for 6 months, and they say, we are going to work half an hour of cobra pose on anahata to develop our heart chakra. Let's make together a nice tapas. If one of them is vegetarian and the other one of them is not vegetarian, after 6 months, they will see different effects. The one who is vegetarian got more effect in the same unit of time than the one who was not vegetarian. Because the one who is not vegetarian simply had to spend the part of the energy he got through yoga to burn impurities, to fight what he himself was putting in it by it. And that is why the yogis say, well, it is difficult enough as it is in big cities today with pollution, with stress, with all these temptations. Spirituality is a difficult field. Anyhow, very few people have the stamina or the guts to go to try to meditate, to do this kind of things. If you also eat meat, you are just making your life heavier. And even so more, that there are today so many dishes that duplicate the meat eating completely. I, for one, have had some pupils and sometimes in Romania and some other places in the West, they were so hooked on cooking, they were very great food lovers, and they did everything possible to duplicate the most impossible dishes that you can imagine, to duplicate it in a vegetarian way. And they succeeded to such an extent, it was incredible. I mean, you could eat food, you wouldn't feel any difference unless it was something in the vibration, in the energy of it. But as taste, you couldn't simply make the difference. You would ask three times, are you sure this one is not with meat? And they would say, no, no, of course, and so on. All this soya protein and things which are today, they can vastly duplicate whatever you need, and many, many other combinations. If you are suffering that if you turn vegetarian, you'll just have to eat rice and French fries and whatever, you are lacking imagination, because actually if you put your imagination into this, you can conceive of vegetarian dishes which are super delicious and super wonderful. If that is your point, buy yourself a very creative vegetarian cookbook and you'd be surprised what you can do and how far it can go. Telling you all this, basically I'm telling you that although we never ask people to be vegetarian, and there will never be any pressure on any one of you, that means I will not frown my eyebrows if I catch you in town eating a beefsteak or something. I don't care about it. After all, it is your problem, it is your spiritual work. I personally chose some 25 years ago not to do it. That was my choice. I'm living with it and I'm very happy for it. Other people choose to do one thing or another. It's their freedom. That is why in yoga we do not impose the obligation of people doing this in any way, but we feel that we should recommend, for hygienical reasons, for energy reasons, and for moral and ethical reasons, at least inform people that vegetarianism is the better option, the cleaner option, the favoring option, and that is why you may feel tempted to approach it. How far can this vegetarianism go? I told you, there are people who consider that they don't eat meat if they, for example, eat fish. Many people would say, I'm eating fish, I'm not eating meat. Some people would laugh and they say, it's absurd. Fish is the meat of the fish. So it's also meat. It's just the meat of an animal, right, which lives in the water. But some people would use it as an excuse. It's not meat, it's fish. It's just a matter of words. That is true, however, that, for example, Buddhist monks in Japan, they would eat even fish. They eat rice and stuff, and fish sometimes, or some seafood like, I don't know, octopus or whatever. Some people don't go as far as that. They stop at the level of eggs. They consider that eggs, milk and dairy products, and all vegetables are the edge of it. That is the what is called ovo-lacto-vegetarian diet. You can even order it on the airplanes. I don't know if you knew. You can ask for ovo-lacto-vegetarian. Most operators don't know. It has a special code. In case you are curious, ask me and I'll tell you. So you can ask next time when you go. Ovo-lacto-vegetarian is the Webster dictionary definition of vegetarianism. In the West, in America and Western countries, when you say I am a vegetarian, it means I am not eating meat and fish, but I am eating egg, milk and so on. In India, the word vegetarianism means also no eggs. The Indians still fight with themselves if eggs are vegetarian or not. Included in the wider concept of vegetarian. Some people say when you eat an egg, you don't kill anything because there is no life in it, basically. Put an egg on the table, it's not alive. Some people say it's not true because an egg will become a chicken, and if you hatch it and so on, therefore it's blood and meat into it. Some people say it will be, but even a cabbage, if you put it on the table, it will rot and make worms and whatever, so it will turn in some life form or whatever. That's not... So they keep arguing, it's the same or it's not the same. Basically most people say the egg is not alive. Mostly most eggs today, they are also not fertilized because the hens are living in farms and so on. Many people would also say an egg, even if it is fertilized, if it's a countryside egg or whatever, from hens moving freely with rooster and everything, still if it is not hatched, it's anything. Put it on the table, it will stay 2 years, it will just get rotten, but it will not become a chicken or anything. So in this way, many people accept that eating eggs is, in India, they are on the edge. Some Indians eat eggs, some Indians don't eat, and they say it's impure, it's not vegetarian. Some people, they go to the vegan option. The people who go to the vegan option, they have a difficult choice to make, because a vegan diet means no animal products whatsoever, not only without eggs, like in India, like lacto-vegetarian, that's lacto-vegetarian, but it's vegan, that means not even milk and dairy. I must say that from the standpoint of modern nutrition, people who choose to be vegan, they should be really careful, because the vegan diet can indeed miss some very important nutritional points. The yogis don't seem to care about this, because the yogis believe in the biological transmutation. The yogis believe that if you don't have calcium or iron or magnesium in your body will produce it out of nothing. And therefore you don't need to eat the complete food by the tables of FDA. You can eat whatever, because a healthy body can convert anything in anything and ensure its own balance. Some people will say yes, but not everybody is a yogi. Not everybody is balanced and in perfect health and purified. So maybe these mechanisms of conversion don't work so much in a normal, in an impure person. In such a case, a vegan diet should be done with care. It is most often reported, for example, that vegan people go anemic and they miss the B12 vitamin. So then you should look in what do you find B12 vitamin in yeast, edible yeast, alimentary yeast, and stuff like this. There are some sources, but they are very unusual, and if you don't know to go on that, then you need to start taking vitamins and dietary supplements, and only God knows where those come from and from what they have been manufactured, so you enter in a circle. That's why with veganism, I generally do not advise people to be vegan. I think it's a too tough option and you risk a few things. Some people go vegan also because of moral things, especially people who are in these animal rights fields and so on. They say you should go and see how animals who produce milk for cheese, how they are kept in farms, immobilized, treated, whatever. It's inhuman, that's why I don't want to be part of it and sponsor it, that's why I refuse to drink milk, I refuse to take cheese products because animals, and I refuse to take eggs. Those chickens are just kept in some cages and they never see the daylight and they eat only crumbled fish and God knows what kind of shit they put in it with chemicals and so on, and therefore blah blah blah. It's true, sometimes this is happening. That's why, of course, you would always, if you eat eggs, you would always prefer an egg taken from the yard of your grandmother who has free-going eggs than one taken from a farm which becomes pale white, has no more shell, and when you open it is just like a diluted soup of sorts or something. Therefore, yes, it would be seen, but also I argued with such people. I showed them in India, look, here people, they have cows, the cows are going freely. It's not that people treat animals better, whatever. You can eat milk from these ones. Have a neighbor, he has a cow, he treats it well, the cow is moving freely, has a lot of food. What is wrong of taking some milk when there is some excess of it? So this is a morally discussable issue. Some people go into this vegan thing of not touching the animal products, whatever, then they wouldn't wear leather shoes, then they wouldn't wear anything. Some people tell them, look, the leather is used after they kill them, they don't kill them for the leather. With the fur animals, they kill them for the fur, but the leather animals, they are never killed just for the leather. They kill them for the meat and then they use the leather. Anyhow, you can argue endlessly, that's why you can never decide where the conscience of a person will tell them to stop. Some people are vegan, some people are lacto-vegetarian, like mostly in India, some people are ovo-lacto-vegetarian, the classical vegetarian definition of Webster, some people, they go a bit further and they eat roe and caviar, the eggs of the fish, and they say it's just eggs, if you eat eggs, why wouldn't you eat the eggs of the fish? Some people say, right, but when you take the caviar or the roe, you actually kill the fish. Some people say, no, it's not true, because I know of a farm where they just milk the fish of the caviar and they let them live. Some people say, yes, but when you milk them, the fish is getting sick. Or some people say, yes, but how do you know if this caviar is coming from such a farm? You can argue. Fact is that some people would go even further than eggs. They would go to roe and caviar. Some people would go, like in the Japanese Zen, up till fish eating and seafood. And of course, if you go further than that, it is really difficult to pretend you are vegetarian of any kind. I met people who are eating chicken, fowl, birds, and so on, and they still said, I am a kind of vegetarian because I don't eat pork and beef and bigger animals, mammals, and so on. Basically, there are many choices. In yoga, we tell to people, do your homework, read, think, meditate, see what you want to do. Maybe you have made your choice already when you are 15 years old. It's not mine to say what choice you make. Make some tests, try to be one way, try one for 6 months, try another one for 6 months, and so on. You will see what is best for you. In yoga, we generally felt the need to advocate for vegetarianism as being a healthier path and to recommend it that whoever would be willing, they should give it a try for 6 months, 1 year. It's not a religious vow of any kind, it's not an oath. Doesn't mean that if one day you ate a little bit of meat, now you polluted yourself and you are a sinner or whatever. It's just very natural. It's where, what your body tells and so on. Generally, I have noticed that people who do vegetarianism of different degrees for a number of months and years, they actually refuse afterwards to eat meat. Simply their body doesn't feel it's right. They don't like it. If they eat, they feel bad, they feel like throwing up, not because of a bulimia factor, simply an organic factor. It's like their body is not used with it and doesn't like it, feels it as being too heavy. I could speak more and more. The vegetarian controversy is as old as history, and from Plato and Socrates and until Albert Einstein and others, people have argued if one should be vegetarian or not. There have been made embryological research if the human being is more vegetarian or carnivorous. There are all kinds of studies which show that the intestine of the human being is proportionally as long as the intestine of herbivores, and it is not as short as the intestine of carnivores. Actually, the human being, by dentition and by intestine, by digestive system, is not even built by Mother Nature to eat meat. Anyhow, we could argue as much as you liked on it. We'll never get to the end of it. I informed you about some facts of it. Read the papers of today. They will inform you about some of the factors of toxicity of meat. And also in that list, just for the peace of mind of some of you, you will find a list of food which is more rich than meat in proteins per 100 grams per unit of weight. And you will be seeing with surprise that there is much food which is much more rich in proteins than the meat. Some of it is incredibly much more rich, like 10 times more proteins per unit. And therefore, there is a list of those for any ones of you who are having this fear that if you don't eat meat, you will not have proteins, you will not have this, you will not have that. Ultimately, I told you, although it's not good to make an example out of yourself, I can tell you only this. I have been there and I have tried it. I have been a heavy carnivorous eater. I have turned vegetarian. I have been there for 20-something years. It's very nice. I wouldn't turn to eating meat for any of the cost. If I don't have food, I prefer not to eat 3 days rather than to touch meat or something like this. It's, of course, my own personal choice. Maybe I'm a bit nuts and many people say so. But the fact is that I have tried it and you will not incur any risk. You will not get low proteic, low vitaminic, anemic, lacking iron, lacking calcium, lacking B12, or whatever other superstition you can have. I have seen it not only on me, because I could be a very privileged case in this nature. I have had friends who quit eating meat at the same time with me. I have followed pupils who quit eating meat over 10 years, 20 years, 5 years, whatever. None of them absolutely ever complained about any damage in their structure because of quitting eating meat. That's why, remember, at least that there is no danger in turning vegetarian whatsoever. It's just an option and you may as well try it. One day I'm planning to supplement this course which you have had today to make it longer with a few more arguments. I felt that the papers that you received today are a bit too short and many things are unsaid, but I made this lecture so I can explain, at least orally, with loud voice, this kind of thing. If you want a good laughter about vegetarianism, try to find this live wire guide to vegetarianism. It will make you feel very funny when you read it. It's a very humoristic book. I'll not say more, that was the point of it. You'll read the papers, you'll analyze the lecture, you'll think for yourself. Tomorrow we are thinking about something else, that is the balance in diet, the balancing of the diet according to the solar and lunar, the yin and yang factors in diet, and that will be our last lecture. This doesn't say that these two lectures are everything I can tell you about diet. There is many more issues, but we don't have more time in the first month because I have to tell you so many things in the first month. Each evening was basically busy with another lecture. In the second month and more, we are continuing with information about more about diet, what to eat, how to eat. So slowly, slowly those interested in yoga, they build up a whole lot of knowledge and they know how to choose a lot of things which are good from a vegetarian standpoint, from the standpoint of a clean diet. I'll not say more. I'll turn to your questions, problems, other issues. One last little administrative thing. Tomorrow we are having again 8:30 the morning class, around 10 o'clock the third layer of the meditation. In the afternoon 3:30, 5:30 the afternoon practice. Tomorrow we'll try to reach all the asanas to make a recapitulation so that we can remember all of them, to have a full program, half in the morning, half in the afternoon. So it's good for refreshing the memory. Also, administratively, as I have looked today, and there are five of you who are entitled to a certificate on Saturday. You know yourselves, those who have been here more than 18 days out of this 24. Please double check that your name is written clearly, because we are going to write in the certificate the name as you wrote it on that file, and the country and everything. So if it is not written clearly, it will be misspelled. So better double check with Peter or with Deborah that it is written clearly and we can understand. I mean, especially for example.
This was a live recording of Swami Vivekananda Saraswati. For more information, visit us on agamayoga.com or go directly to agamayoga.com/downloads.